Hello and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sutter. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support there is very much appreciated, as always. Today is our Monday episode. The Suns played on Sunday in Sacramento. We're going to recap that in our first segment. Once again, inconsistency from the Suns, which we're going to hit on again in our second segment, too. Just why are the Suns so inconsistent? They have these good games, and they always follow it up with kind of these stinker outings. So we'll go over that in our second segment. And in our final segment, we're going to look ahead to the post-All-Star break schedule. I know they play the Clippers on Wednesday, but the Suns are really looking at possibly 14, 15, maybe even 16 straight losses with the way the schedule's looking. So we'll go over that and see if they can make a solid run in the second half of the season. So, Brent, let's kick it off here with the Sacramento game. The Suns really weren't in this game after the first 5 minutes or so. I know they made it close in the end, 104-117, but really, after the first 10 or so minutes of that game, they were down by 18 to 20, 25 points. It was pretty much over.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part. They came back a little bit in the third quarter, had a pretty strong third quarter, but I mean, what, they were down 15 still at that point. So I think they really just didn't, I mean, we're kind of back to the same things. They had a pretty decent week against really strong Western Conference teams. Houston, Utah, Golden State. I mean, I know the Utah game was ugly in the final score, but they were competitive in that one. They didn't let it get out of hand like they did here. So I mean, maybe it's fool's gold. Maybe it's just not even worth necessarily expecting it at this point. But I really kind of did wonder if those three games might have been a turning point. I wrote about it last week a little bit, just showing the team, or the team kind of showing itself, like, if you compete hard and execute the game plan, you can, for the most part, stay competitive. They don't necessarily have the talent, especially with all these injuries, to go out there and win a bunch of games, but they have the coaching, and they have the, you know, two rocks in Ayton and Booker, where they're going to be able to do some stuff on either side, and they just need to execute and play with effort. And you saw right away, I think the Sacramento threes, the ability of the Kings to just get out in transition, get out in the fast break out of really nowhere and knock down tough shots, I think that kind of demoralized them, and they didn't have the fight to come back right away, and it just kind of snowballed from there.
I saw you had a Twitter conversation with Max, our friend over at 7 Seconds or Less podcast, during the game yesterday about the starting lineup. I want to hit on really quick with you, Brandon. Were you surprised that Josh Jackson started the four? I know Nemanja Bjelica, like you said on Twitter, is not really the guy that you scheme around as far as that goes. But do you think the Suns were just trying to match pace there with starting Jackson instead of Dragan Bender or Kelly Oubre?
Yeah, it is interesting. Just the only way that it kind of makes sense to me as far as people that might have wanted to see Bender in there instead of Jackson is just the fact that Bender had been starting, that against Utah and Golden State he had been starting. So really, just for continuity's sake, I think that's kind of where I might have seen the value in doing that. But yeah, I don't think Bjelica is the type of player, despite, I mean, he's a mobile, decent ball handler at, you know, 6'9", 6'10", with, he's a big dude too, you know, maybe 250 or something like that. And so I get he's a matchup problem just as a player, but I don't think he's necessarily the type of guy. I mean, you think about Derek Favors, Draymond Green, clearly better players than he is. So I think the Suns, yeah, I think what you're saying is right. It was probably just a matter of, against Sacramento, knowing that especially at home, they're going to try to push the pace. They're going to try to turn even made baskets into transition opportunities for themselves and take a bunch of threes, move the ball. I think it was putting Jackson out there ideally is more of a combat against that. And I mean, Bjelica didn't even do too well. So only played 22 minutes, 4 of 12 from the field. So I don't think he really burned them like you might have worried about. I think it was really everyone else, and Jackson and Bridges not having their typical impact playing defense, and some other guys not picking up the slack.
Yeah, that really hurt them as far as that goes. And the size, I wanted to hit on with you as well, because from the Kings side of things, Marvin Bagley had his breakout game of the season. He had 32 points in 10 of 15 shooting. Like you mentioned, Bjelica had 10 points, 8 rebounds. He also had 4 offensive rebounds. Willie Cauley-Stein had 3 offensive rebounds. Buddy Hield also had 3 offensive rebounds as a guard. So the main point I wanted to get out here, Brent, is that it seems like every game this season, we talk about just the rebounding aspect of the Suns, even though they do have DeAndre. And it just seems like, maybe just me, I'll throw it back your way just for your opinion on this, but do the Suns really know how to box out anyone? Because it seems like every time I watch these guys play, it seems like they don't really box out. They just use their athleticism to try to go get the ball.
Yeah, they don't pursue loose, like, you know, not necessarily loose balls like steals and stuff, but, you know, loose rebounds, rebounds that don't go directly to them. They don't fight for them. They don't get in position very well. I think that is an issue. I mean, they did out-rebound the Kings yesterday, so I can't say that was something that I necessarily noticed from yesterday. I think it's, I know what you're talking about as far as we do see it basically every single night, and especially on allowing offensive rebounds has been a problem for this team. So I definitely, and Bagley, just the athleticism, he made Rashawn Holmes look like he was, you know, Shaq when he played for the Suns, like groundbound old man. Like he really, it was surprising to me with Holmes so often being that source of energy off the bench for the Suns, somebody who's at the very least going to go grab you some putbacks and block some shots. To see Bagley just kind of hand it to him was impressive. So the Kings definitely just kind of in every area pretty thoroughly outplayed the Suns. And I think the transition defense is actually the one thing I would note too, is just, I mean, I mentioned the Kings, that's the game plan against the Kings. That's how they play. That's how they've had success this year. Everybody knows that by now, but for some reason, the Suns just consistently got matchups they didn't want in transition when they were cross matching on the Kings. Maybe some of that is the Bielitsa situation. But they didn't make it an effort to get back in position on defense, find their man and lock down. They just let easy shot after easy shot up.
Yeah. I'm really kind of impressed by Bagley, by the way. I was low on him.
Yeah, he was great.
I had Wendell Carter ahead of him. I believe you had him too. And that was kind of the general consensus near the end of things. And I know Bagley went number two overall, but if he's shooting the ball like he did yesterday and he's really outrunning all these centers, like Rashawn's making him look as old as he did, I mean, he's going to be a problem in a couple of years, and that's going to be really exciting for Kings fans with pairing
him. Yeah, he looked big too, didn't he? I mean, like, one of the things I was worried about is just if his, because he's ideally a five in the NBA, and I was just worried if his size and physicality would be able to match NBA centers, and he had no issue.
Do you think that, I know this isn't a Kings worthy podcast, but do you think they just let WCS walk this summer and just let Bagley start next year?
I mean, they have Harry Giles there, and I definitely don't think you're in a hurry to pay Willie Cauley-Stein, especially if Bagley keeps putting this together. They were shown on the broadcast yesterday that over his last few games, he's at like 14 and 10. So, I mean, that's close to what Ayton's been at for the whole year. I mean, obviously it's a whole year versus just a few weeks for Bagley, who has struggled through some injuries of his own this year, but it was fun. I mean, we didn't see this matchup in summer league. We didn't see it in the first couple games between these two teams, but it definitely, it held up. But who was interesting to you from the Sun side of things? Who did you think anybody played well? I mean, Ayton put up some solid box score numbers.
Yeah, Ayton put up some solid box score numbers. So did Booker. Booker had 27, 8, and 6. Most of those damage was kind of done in the blowout, though. I think Booker had around 14 at halftime. But one thing I wanted to hit on with the Suns is kind of interesting. I'm writing a story on this that will go up today or tomorrow. It's about DeAndre Ayton and his touches inside. Are you surprised? I know, especially Devin Booker, when he's back, he's the number one guy. But I think now when you see how dominant Ayton could be when he's a guy who gets consistent inside touches, when you saw it on Friday against Golden State, I mean, he put up 14 points in the first quarter pretty much. Why did he only get 10 shots in this game? And do you think that's been a consistent issue? Because I looked up on the tracking stats on NBAstats.com, and really he's never gotten more than 20 or really 10 or 15 touches in the post really ever.
Yeah, he did a good job early in the game of – he had a nice little hook shot over a mismatch. I don't remember exactly who it was. I think it might have been Bielitsa. Early in the game, he had a little hook shot and – then had a couple more. He was dribbling in the post, which has been a huge problem for him, to actually put the ball on the ground, make some space for himself and find an open teammate or a better shot even within the post. And he's been doing that better and better. I think a lot of it is like kind of what you mentioned with Booker there. When this team gets down, I mean, I don't even think it's necessarily like a problem. I just think, you know, once the score is so lopsided, they just kind of put up shots. You know what I mean? I think like in the fourth quarter, when you're down 15, I don't know. I mean, maybe it is too fatalistic of this team to always act as if they don't have a chance to get back in it, but just watching them, doesn't it kind of feel like once the score is so far in the other team's favor. They're not really running offense anymore. They're kind of just, you know, let's do a pick and roll here. Let's put up the first good shot we see and hope for the best. And so Ayton isn't going to get involved that way because the offense isn't really designed to flow through him like that. So I don't know. That's my best explanation, because I just feel like, especially in blowouts, he gets really not phased out, but he just kind of falls out of the picture.
No, I agree with that. That's a really good point you bring up. And that's kind of the reason why when you fall by 15 to 20 points in a game, 3 points better than 2 points. So you jack up a lot more 3-pointers. Booker, Tyler Johnson, Mikal Bridges, for example, all each attempted 5 threes in this game. But really interesting for me is just how the dynamic I'm seeing on Twitter. It's really interesting. This turn that's happening is that this angle that Devin Booker is not a winning player. I don't know why this is happening on Suns Twitter, but I know you probably seen on Twitter yesterday just everyone freaking out about why does Devin Booker always put up these gaudy stats and losses. But I don't know if you guys have watched the Memphis game, you guys watched the Dallas game earlier this season. They wouldn't have won either of those games without Devin Booker having as great of a game as he did. And I'm just kind of surprised at the community's reaction to this turn against Devin Booker. It's not really a turn, so to say, but just like the first inklings I've seen around the community that kind of it's kind of hard to explain, Brendan, because it just seems like when you put 27, 8, and 6 and people are complaining about your stat line and how you perform, it just doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. I think the one area where I could see, I mean, maybe we can talk about this a little bit more in our second segment here too, about just what it will take to become a more consistent team. And I think that is one area where Booker does deserve some, not blame, but he is part of what could be improved with consistency. I think a lot of the time, and this happened a little bit yesterday, he and I just think of that Portland game too, where it was really emphatic. He'll come out really hot in the first quarter, and then it does sometimes feel like he doesn't reinsert himself into the game in a way that is super impactful. I think second quarter is like, I would be interested to dive into his second quarter stats, just across the board box score numbers, just see if they're how much lower they are than the rest of the game for him, because it feels like he has a hot first quarter and then we don't really hear from him again until, you know, the third quarter, and then if the game's close into the fourth quarter where he's taking the majority of the team shots. And that I think is one area where I get it. But overall, I think it's just, I mean, we've dealt with this for years now. Just, it's frustrating to lose. It's frustrating to watch losing basketball. And I think fans just get kind of frustrated overall.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to be now 4 straight seasons now with Devin Booker's career. He's never eclipsed over 25 wins. Now with the Suns at 11-47. They're going to have over 500 basketball the rest of the season for that even to happen, which honestly isn't going to happen. So, interesting to follow that and really moving forward. Anything else you want to hit on as far as this game goes? I know Josh Jackson had his birthday yesterday, had a solid outing of 18-5-3, but any other solid points you want to hit on from that game?
No, I think that's plenty, and we can move on to kind of what comes next here.
Alrighty, before we go on to looking ahead and see how the Suns can be more consistent, I want to tell you guys really quickly about our Locked On NBA Network. You can already go on Twitter, type in @LockedOnNBAnet and follow that account. It's one of our valuable resources out there on NBA Twitter, in my opinion. Bert and I both follow the account. You can also follow all our coverage on that account as well. All 30 NBA teams, all 30 podcast hosts are synced on that one account. So if you want a lot more awesome coverage outside of Phoenix, and you guys enjoy everything we do here on Locked On Suns, but there's so much more great voices out there on the Locked On Network. So if you're not already doing so, go and follow @LockedOnNBAnet on Twitter for your really one of the best resources on Twitter.
I want to also tell you guys about Homie. Homie is a new entry into the Phoenix market here to help you buy and sell your house and make sure you save as much money possible when you do so. They have a team of real estate agents and lawyers to help you every step of the way. They also have an ability to help you find a loan, to help you list your house, to use a website and interface that actually makes sense and supports you through the process. But most of all, like I said, the goal is to save you a whole ton of money. Homie charges a low flat fee, so you don't have to pay any high commissions when you sell. That means that you can list your house for just $199 and pay just $1,299 at close. That means that on average, Homie customers are saving over $10,000, and they can help you qualify for up to a $5,000 buyer refund. So you can see the goal here is obviously to cut out the commissions and fees and hassle that normally goes in to this process and make it as smooth and cheap as possible. To learn more about my friends at Homie, text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, that's Homie, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. All righty, let's move on here to what I think is really becoming the biggest problem, because I think, let's actually start here, because it's something I feel like I'm sold on, but I want to hear what you think about it. Do you think this team is better than last year's team, even though the record is worse?
That's a really good question. I feel like maybe that's tough. I'm going to say yes, I think it's better than last year's team just on pure talent alone. But I just think that most of this plays into the role of, once again, you have even a younger roster than last year, which, by the way, Ryan McDonough, the former GM of the Suns, said he was going to bring in more than three rookies last year. He brought in four. So got the roster even younger. You have a rookie head coach. It just seems like this is another transition year. And looking back on last year, Brandon, it seems like that was a transition year. So it just seems like they're kind of stuck in neutral right now. And I don't really know, unless they keep everyone around for next year and they build upon it, it just seems like this is kind of a lost season where it's just development again. And I just, that's false hope from what we heard in preseason, because before he got fired, McDonough said this is the most improved team in the NBA. And with the way they're playing, I think McDonough probably wouldn't have lasted 25 or 30 games this season anyway.
I agree. And the young roster point is a good one. And I think that's, I wanted to just establish, because I agree with you, I do think this team is more talented and deeper than last year's team by a pretty good margin. And I think the fact that they got younger kind of on accident really does hurt them, because, you know, no Tyson Chandler, they bought him out, which he wasn't going to make an impact this year. He didn't really make too much of an impact last year, but that does change things a little bit. And then they were hoping to have, I mean, opening night, they had Trevor Ariza and Ryan Anderson starting. So, you know, they wanted to have two really veteran players in that rotation right away, and neither of them worked out. And then you think about also the fact that when McDonough was talking about that, I mean, there was still a, I don't know when he said that quote, but in the summer, there was still a chance we thought that Brandon Knight would be involved here. I know Anderson was traded for him, so there was never going to be both of those guys, but that was supposed to be a veteran at the point guard spot. Obviously, his season hasn't worked out in Houston either, but just in general, I think there was an idea that veterans were going to play a bigger role this year than they did last year, even with Jared Dudley and Tyson Chandler around last season, and that completely flipped. And now we have Kelly Oubre, Tyler Johnson, who are both, you know, about, Johnson's already on his second deal, Oubre's about to be, they're young veterans, I guess you could call them, but those aren't guys who are going to be consistent difference makers in the way that those veterans always are for bad young teams. So I think that that impact, that guidance just hasn't been there. And that is a big reason. As silly as it can sound, like, there's not really a numbers type of way to point to that, but we know it makes an impact.
I'm right there with you. And I'm looking right now just at the roster's age. And like you said, Tyler Johnson's only his fifth year. And he even mentioned on Friday that it's kind of quote unquote weird to be the veteran leader after going from such an old locker room in Miami to being one of the oldest guys in Phoenix. And is that roster construction really weird to you, Brian? Because it seems like not many teams around the league have a guy who's a fifth-year pro being one of their veteran guys in the locker room. And even have Mikal Bridges, who's older than Devin Booker, as a rookie, is even be called upon as kind of a leader now, which I think it's one of the more interesting and kind of odd roster constructions I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, overall, I think a lot of starting lineups, especially at this point in the season, are pretty young. So I don't think it's necessarily crazy that the Suns are going that route, because I think that should be how you give your playing time out if you're young and bad, is, well, get these guys on the court as much as possible. But I really think a lot of it does come down to the failures of finding the right veterans. I think, you know, positionally, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You look at somebody like a team like Atlanta, where Jeremy Lin, okay, that's a point guard. That's a guy who's going to be able to stabilize things for you in a meaningful way. You know, Tyson Chandler is a center. That's on defense, okay. You know, he's going to be a guy to hold people accountable and move people around. It didn't really make too much of a difference with how young the team around him was, but you could see. But like a Jared Dudley, I mean, that's not a guy who really you could see making too much of an impact. Or, you know, Trevor Ariza, another example. Like, what? Ideally, that's going to come off the court, but what is he really going to do? So I think it's mostly just how the dominoes fell since then. But I guess with guys like Booker, I guess Booker specifically, like, what do you think the difference is with him? Why do you think that perception exists? And why do you think we don't? Because one thing that I've been struck by this year being around the team more is, not to call Booker out or anything, I don't feel this way like one way or another, but it is interesting to me just that I mostly noticed it when he got ejected from that game with the Gorgui Jang situation, and talking to people, hearing the coach talk after the game, hearing Josh Jackson talk about it, he didn't really like set aside time and go talk to the team and hold himself accountable, address it in any meaningful way. It was kind of like, oh, that's basketball, that's the NBA, you get into situations, you all know how it works, let's move on and play tomorrow night. And that was just really odd to me. Maybe I'm overreacting. I'm obviously not an athlete. Like, maybe that's normal, but it didn't seem to me like that's how a lot of other guys would have handled it. And it seems like a bigger picture of kind of just he wants to go about his work and have the guys improve around. Like, he's like, I got here and I'm waiting for everyone else to kind of get there with me. Do you read it the same way, or am I like reading too much into it?
I think you're onto something there. I think that I think Booker is kind of trying to be more of a leader. I mean, he's only, for example's sake, I'm 2 weeks older than Devin Booker, so that kind of tells you how young he is still. And I feel like he's kind of trying to grow into that role still. And I think it takes a while. I think that maybe it's just he's only 22, and you hope that by the time his max contract hits, it's more of an accountability thing that he's getting paid almost $30 million a year now. He's got to be that leader. So I think if this still happens next year, where we see these games where once Booker's back in the lineup, if, for example, he like tweaks a hammy or something and he goes back in after a 3-game stint, the Suns play a lot better when he's not on the court. And then when he's back on the court, it seems like everyone's like, okay, we have Book back. We don't have to worry about much. We can sag off on some stuff. Do you notice that part of it too? Because I feel like that's kind of part of it as well, where when Booker returns to the lineup, it seems like some guys kind of lax a little bit as far as aggressiveness goes.
Yeah, I think that is a big part of it. And he mentioned as much when he said he had a conversation with Josh Jackson, just telling him to maintain that, you know, keep that same energy, basically, like don't go back into your role player mentality. Like, oh, I'm going to attack in transition and play some defense. Like, he's like, no, you know, I need all of that. And I think that was healthy. And you've seen Jackson be able to bring it. And he took 16 shots yesterday and has been kind of playing the same style with Booker on the court, even starting with him as he did when Booker was out. And that has been good to see. And I think you're right that it is, of course, a learning process. Not everybody's born that way, especially being so young, like we started out talking about. Somebody who's 22 years old being the voice in a locker room is not ideal and not easy. And I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are like, well, you know, athletes make all this money, it's totally fine to just expect the world out of them. But I mean, like, you think he's making a ton of money, but he also has the weight of an entire multi-billion potentially dollar franchise on his shoulders at age 22. That is a ton to deal with and to try to adjust to, in addition to just working on your game, your being a good basketball player every night. So it is tough, but I think the other big thing we have to talk about too is just injuries. I mean, that's been a big part of it. Just when one guy gets better, gets on the court, two or three other guys seem to fall out. So, you know, we got Ayton coming back right as TJ Warren and D'Anthony Melton were shelved for extended stretches. Booker's been in and out of the lineup. It seems like just about everybody's missed time. Rashawn Holmes, so Jamal Crawford, even for a couple weeks there. So, I mean, how much different do you think this team will look just when the normal, whatever the starting lineup ends up being, but when they have their ideal 8-9 man rotation here?
I'm hopeful that it improves, but I'm kind of worried at this point when I feel like there are going to be 14 losses, probably going to be 15 losses, for being honest, on Wednesday against the Clippers. But it just seems like maybe this team, 22 of 24 now, it just seems like maybe they kind of get in their own heads when they're on a losing streak, and it's kind of hard to crawl out of it. And especially when you have such a young locker room, it just seems like that's a thing where you need like a veteran voice, like a Patrick Beverley type of guy who's a no-nonsense kind of guy who's going to be like, hey, guys, this is unacceptable. Like, we got to improve. 12 of 14, this is not acceptable. We got to get a lot better. We can easily beat these teams. Let's just improve right for blah, 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 for example. I think they're missing that guy in the locker room. I know Devin Booker is supposed to be that leader, but I don't know if him or really anyone else. I don't think Ryan Anderson was that guy. I don't think he's a vocal guy like that. Trevor Ariza obviously wasn't a vocal guy like that. It just seems like that part of the locker room is missing, where I think that's where James Jones needs to focus on this offseason, is finding that voice in the locker room, that that 100% leader of the locker room, because I feel like Booker is the star player of the locker room, but I don't know if he's exactly the alpha leader of the locker room, like a Draymond Green, for example.
Yeah, I don't think he is that type of leader. I think he's kind of what I was getting at before too, is just, I think he prefers to do it by example. And I don't know if that's always the most effective thing, especially just when such a young team, they just aren't there. It's not a matter of necessarily just motivating, because if they don't have the experience or the talent level at this point in their careers, it's not going to be a matter of just improving. It's going to be a matter of getting the mentality and execution where it needs to be. And I think Jamal Crawford is one of those guys, but we've talked about before, you know, he played 4 minutes against the Kings last night. He's not, I don't think, as big a part of the actual playing the rotation and just being in the moment with these guys like you would hope, just because of his age and because of his inconsistency this year of his own. So I agree with you. It's tough to find those guys to get that exact match where they're actually productive players at the same time as fitting what you want to be doing from an age standpoint and, you know, not making too much money, all those things. It's tough to find those guys, but I agree that over the past few seasons, they haven't had one. And the other thing about Booker, you talk about guys who are going to instill the whatever winning attitude, whatever those types of things mean, like whoever's going to be doing that, it's got to be somebody who's actually done it. And so Booker does a great job, does more than I could expect him to do at such a young age, but he hasn't, you know, won a championship. He's not a guy who has had to adjust and overcome and sacrifice and all those things to really get to the very top of the NBA. And that's not anything against him. That's just reality. So I don't know if he's that type of guy at this point in his career either, but do you have anything else you want to hit with kind of what they can do to change just inside, or do you want to move on here to the next few games?
Yeah, I know you brought up an interesting point about Booker and his second quarter stats. While you were talking there, I actually did some number crunching for you, and you're actually on the sum. At the first quarter, he attempts 6 field goal attempts per game, averages 8 points in the first quarter. In the second quarter, though, it falls all the way down to 3.5 field goal attempts, 5 points, and he averages the same amount of assists and turnovers. Then in the third and fourth quarter, it's back up to normal numbers at 5 and 4.9. So, yeah, definitely, I don't know why that second quarter trend is actually weird, but there's a pretty big difference in the second quarter compared to everyone else.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think he plays mostly the entire first quarter and then doesn't play as much. He plays maybe 6 minutes of the second quarter and then like 8 or 9 minutes in each of the third and fourth quarter. So I think that is part of it, of course, but you know, star players have to adjust and get that rotation. Maybe that's something he is, you know, working on with the coaching staff. Maybe that's part of it, is kind of bridging the gap in the backcourt for all 48 minutes with so little talent. We've talked about over and over, maybe Tyler Johnson helps, but I definitely think that is part of it. And we've seen so many bad second quarters from this team. Even when they do play okay in the first quarter, they can't maintain it. So I think that's definitely part of it. Maybe I'll write about that or something. But before we move on here, and not just up until the All-Star break, because they just have the Clippers on Wednesday here, but coming out of the All-Star break, they have a few Eastern Conference winnable games, and we'll talk about what they can do if there's any chance of even getting to last year's win total at this point. But before we do that, I want to talk to you guys about an awesome new way to listen to our show. That is with your smart speaker. So if you have a Google Home or an Amazon Echo, definitely make sure you're making that part of your routine when you check out what we're doing here. So just tell that smart speaker, play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. It's as easy as that. It'll cue the last episode and pick you up right where you left off. So don't miss any episodes, and make sure you're using that smart speaker as part of a staple of how you check us out. Thanks so much. All righty, let's move on here. So you don't think they beat the Clippers? Danilo Gallinari's back. They've had really not a lot of success against that team this year.
Yeah, I feel like, especially when I saw the comments from Booker last night from Dwayne Rankin, he pretty much said the All-Star break that he's going to be working on his game, and he hopes everyone else is doing the same. I feel like this team's kind of looking forward to the All-Star break, having a week off, and I kind of have a bad feeling that Wednesday's going to be just like Sunday's was.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree. I think the Clippers are tough just because they're so deep. They had a ton of changes at the deadline here, but they still just have like 12 guys who are better than, like, they're 12th guy is probably better than the Suns, like, 6th guy. So that's tough. I mean, that's just the reality. But after the All-Star break, I think is interesting. And you brought this up, but that's why we want to talk about it here. But at Cleveland, at Atlanta, at Miami, they have a day off between all of them. No back-to-backs there. I mean, it's an East Coast road trip, but they also have the whole break to prepare for it. And and get that rest where it needs to be, I think they could, they're going to be competitive in all those. Of course, Cleveland, you would hope they would win. They have a lot more talent than Cleveland, but I think they should be able to be in all of those games and could set themselves up for a better month and a half to close the year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And you look at those three games, and you look at the next four after that, the homestand they're going to have. And after really that four-game homestand gets really tough again for about a couple of weeks. But the four-game homestand after those three games is New Orleans, Los Angeles Lakers, the Milwaukee Bucks, New York Knicks. You have Giannis and LeBron coming to town, and Anthony Davis possibly if he's not sitting. So that could be three out of four losses there, to be honest. But what worries me, Brent, is that if they're going to have 15 straight losses, they lose on Wednesday. If they come out flat after the break and they lose, let's say two out of three or all three of these games against Cleveland, Atlanta, Miami, I don't know how this is going to go, because if they lose all three of those games, I feel like this could be even worse. They can nosedive even farther.
I agree with you. I'm sorry. Jeremy Lin just got bought out, and that was surprising. He's going to sign with the Raptors.
Oh, wow.
That just took me off guard. I saw Woj tweet it. I completely agree that you can't bet on anything at this point, I think, is the problem here. That's what's plaguing this team, is the inconsistency we just finished talking about. So it's tough to bet on them to win any games at this point. I'm interested to see, though, because I think, you know, they have played, now that we're getting into the end of the year, you can kind of think back, like, they've played all these teams already. So that will help them. I mean, they haven't played Cleveland yet. They'll play them twice in the last 6 weeks, which will be very nice. Of course, big tanking and lottery implications for those games as well. I think I'm fine with them winning them. I'm not going to sell out for Zion at this point. We've done that too many times now. But I mean, I think they have some winnable games. They've been competitive against, they were competitive against Atlanta. They've been competitive against, Milwaukee in the past. They've played New Orleans hard historically. Booker's had some big games against them, even with Jrue Holiday there. So, I mean, that's the thing, right? They can win any game, I guess. They've beaten really good teams out of nowhere this year, and they've lost to bad ones. So I have some optimism that getting healthy and having the break to kind of be honest with themselves, integrate Tyler Johnson a little bit more. If we come out and out of the All-Star break, we have the Suns with, let's just say, Johnson, Booker, Bridges, Warren, and Ayton starting, and then you have Oubre, Melton, Jackson, Holmes off the bench, like that nine can compete against most teams in the league, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. If that was an Eastern Conference game, that'd be like an eight seed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and if you project better health, which seems tough to do, I think they could start to play a little closer to, you know, maybe not 500, but like 400 basketball. So why don't we just predict the, get out of here by predicting the next seven after the break. So I think we're on the same page. They'll probably lose to the Clippers, but Cleveland, Atlanta, Miami, what do you have them on the road trip to start with?
Ooh, that's a toughie. The Atlanta one's kind of a swing one for me, because I feel like Miami is going to be a loss. I don't know why, but I feel like Dwayne Wade is going to go off in that game for some reason in his last dance tour. But
it's Tyler Johnson revenge game.
That is true. That could be the jersey swap with him and Dwayne Wade would be cool. But Atlanta, that's just really tough for me. I feel like Trae Young, especially with how it went off against them in Phoenix, I feel like that might be a loss. So I'll say Cleveland's their only win, and they'll be 1-2 after those three games.
Okay, I'll go 2-1. I agree, Miami. I think they're just a better team, and they weren't particularly competitive against that team the first time around, and don't have the versatility to match up with Miami. So I'll go 2-1 though. I think they can beat the Hawks with Tyler Johnson here, defending Trae Young hopefully a little better than the Suns did in that fourth quarter. I think that was the difference in the last Hawks game. So I'll go 2-1, and now we have the homestand here, four games all in the course of like 8 days. New Orleans, the Lakers, Milwaukee, New York. What do you got for those four?
If Anthony Davis plays, I say they go 1-3. If Anthony Davis doesn't play, I say 2-2.
Okay. I mean, I think he will play. So I'll say, I might go 1-3 there, unfortunately. Just the Knicks. I think they'll beat the Knicks. I think every team should beat the Knicks at this point. So I have faith they'll win that one. But other than that, I mean, they should be better against the Lakers, but they just are so bad in transition that the Lakers push the pace, and we've seen the Lakers just kill them all year. So I don't think they can win that one. So yeah, 1-3 for me. So that means I'm at, 3-5 over the core, 3-4 over the course of that 7 games. And you're at what?
2-5.
Yeah. So better a little bit, right? But I think the reality is until they turn it around, it's tough to feel great about them any night.
Yeah. Let me ask you this really quickly, because I was adding some quick math in my head. And if the Suns want to match their record for last season, which was 21 wins, they have to win 10 of their last 24 games if they want to exceed that 11 out of 13. So do you think that's even possible for this team to play 500 basketball the rest of the season?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think they'll get there. Yeah, 538 has them projected for 19 right now, which feels honestly optimistic, but I also think their schedule is so easy. They also, they're going on the road to play these bad teams right now. They get them at home even at the end of March. So Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Memphis, a few different ones. Well, obviously, with New York, we already mentioned they have at home, Washington. So they'll clean up, hopefully, some wins at the very end of the year. But no, I don't think they get to 21.
Yeah, this is going to be, as you guys can tell, another rough season for the Phoenix Suns. It's going to be possibly less than 20 wins. This would be the worst record in franchise history. But anything else you want to hit on as far as today's podcast goes, Brendan?
No, that's all.
All righty, guys. That'll do it for today's episode. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow for our latest episode. So appreciate you guys listening.